Our study is out of Isaiah 22:22-3:11, God's judgment for trusting in man's social order versus God. Interesting topic. Everywhere we look in today's world, the threat of the breakdown in man's social order abounds. The health issue with this Ebola deal and what the government is or isn't doing. The Middle East. So forth. The economy, the market was on it went down 400 points at one point today and came back. It's now down only, quote, end of point, 100 and some points. So it's been all over the market. There's been a tremendous amount of volatility. Well, Isaiah chapter 2, 22-3:11 reveals this is not a surprising mistake, but God's discipline for inerrant trust in man versus a trust in God. And this passage offers a wonderful motivating promise for believers who live in today's world. I'd like to read it, and then we'll look at it. The theme in verse 22 actually starts, even though we finished it last week. Verse 22 of chapter 2, "Cease ye from man, or cease trusting in man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of?" In chapter 3, "For behold, the Lord of hosts, does take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water, the mighty man and the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, and the ancient, the captain of 50, and the honorable man, the counselor, the cunning artificer, the eloquent orator. And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. And the people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. The child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient, and the base against the honorable. When a man shall take hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, Thou hast clothing, be our ruler. Let this ruin be under your hand. And that day he shall swear, saying, I will not be an healer, for in my house is neither bread nor clothing. Make me not a ruler of the people. For Jerusalem is ruined, and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord, to provoke the eyes of his glory. The show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they declare their sin is Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. Say you to the righteous that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for the reward of his hand shall be given unto him." Okay. Isaiah 2:22 admonition to stop trusting in man that summarizes the Isaiah 2:6-21 general exposure of Judah's sins that we covered last week. It also acts to introduce Isaiah chapter 3, verse 1-4:1, where God focuses on specific sins caused by this errant trust in man versus the correct trust in the Lord. So to reveal the futility of trusting in the social order itself, God predicted in Isaiah chapter 3, 1-3, that he was about to remove that protective social order, what would produce anarchy in society. I personally believe that this has tremendous application to what's going on in the world today. I believe that the Lord is allowing a lot of what is going on because man has come to trust in himself, or he's come to trust in the government, or come to trust in this entity or that entity instead of trusting in the Lord. And one way to get our attention onto the Lord is for him to do that. And he will. I mean, he's very jealous of our trust in him and our love to him. Well, having called them to stop trusting in man as he was of no account in Isaiah 2:22, the Lord of hosts, and this is a picture that reminds Judah that God was sovereign in her affairs, then said that he would take away from them every kind of stay and staff of their social order. The phrase stay and staff refers to every type of prop that you have, every type of crutch. He's going to remove it all. All the foundations. Okay, specifically, God would remove bread and water, indispensable provisions for life. Now, of course, this is going to happen in the Great Tribulation period to a much greater extent where people will die because of a lack of food and so forth. They'll die of hunger and whatnot. But this was fulfilled actually when the Babylonians surrounded the city and cut the city off from food and so forth. And that's what the Lord was going to do. He's going to cut away their indispensable provisions in life. He would also remove their military protection from the military leader to the common soldier. God would also remove judge and prophet needed for both legal and then spiritual order and welfare in society. Then God would remove the diviner. This would be the prudent. Happens to be an unbiblical office, but one nonetheless used by the people. And the elder of the people needed for basic social stability in the community. The elders were very, very important. You had an elder society. It is a male-dominated society, and the elders were very, very important, much like in Japan today, an elderly person is really looked up to, but an elderly man in particular. Then God would remove officials over 50 and other men of authority and responsibility capable and necessary for law and order, and counselors needed for imparting practical wisdom. And then skillful craftsmen, cunning artificer in King James is a skillful craftsman, someone who's skilled at carpentry or someone who's skilled at tool and die making, this kind of thing, would be removed. And expert enchanters, the word eloquent orator is an expert enchanter, happens to be an unbiblical calling, but one that was used in Judah. All both of these God would remove. And it's interesting, there were stages in which Babylon would take some of the top people and the well-trained people and the princes and so forth, took them back and left poorer and poorer people. And the hope was that Israel would, or Judah would stop rebelling. But of course she didn't. She kept going at them. So in place of these crutches of the social order, God would make boys Judah's princes and children her rulers. And this prediction was fulfilled in Manasseh's reign when he began to rule at age 12. And it was followed by the politically inept reigns of Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. The last four kings that they had were just really disastrous for the nation. They didn't use wisdom at all. And this was seen as divine judgment. Well, consequently, the people of Judah would begin to oppress one another in socially appalling ways, with the young rising up to harm the old and the base rising up to harm the honorable. I understand that this is happening in our society today. There's a sort of a so-called fun thing that has happened with youth. They'll come along with an elderly person and bop them on the head, sometimes knock them out or so forth, and they think this is a lot of fun. And this is happening in various places around the country. And sometimes these elderly people are 80 or 90 years of age, and the teens will come along and hit them hard and so forth, and it's very damaging. Sometimes there's brain damage and whatnot, but that type of thing was happening, is going to happen in Judah. There would be a breakdown in law and order. Then, this social disorder would make life so dreadful that men would try to install each other as leaders of their ruined society, but no one would want to rule, as he had no means to provide for any improvement. I've heard increasingly people today say, I wouldn't want to be president of the United States for anything in the world. You know, well, look what they have to deal with. You know, even if a person were a good president, it would be awfully hard to get all of the sides together and people to unite, because there's so much self-centeredness. It used to be that we would have real statesmen who were really concerned about the welfare of the nation, the people. Nowadays, everybody's just continually running for the next election. So, and that's, unfortunately, that happens at the state level, it happens at the national level as well, and many times even in the town levels as well. Well, God explained that he would allow this social disorder to arise as judgment on Judah's many sins that the people had committed without shame, as in the case of the men of Sodom. Of course, the men of Sodom without shame were very, very wicked men. When the angels of God visited Lot and so forth, these men were so wicked they wanted to have relations with the angels of God, and of course God had to judge this place because of its wickedness. However, there's a tremendous bright spot in all of this breakdown, and that bright spot is in verses 10 and 11. Say you to the righteous that if it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with them, for the reward of his hand shall be given to him. Though the social order would fail due to Judah's sins, the calamity of the social disorder would befall only individual sinners, where blessing would come to those individuals who had lived righteously before the Lord. See, God was trying to get people to look to him. He was a source of their blessing, not the social order. If there was any social order, it was something that God had provided, but people had gotten away from the Lord. So God says, I'm going to apply this individually. God, first of all, told Isaiah to tell righteous individuals who, according to the context, had recalled that they were accountable to obey the Lord to be blessed, that life would go well for them amid the coming social disorder. For the sovereign Lord would cause them individually to be blessed by eating the fruit of their deeds, that is, to be rewarded for their good works. And of course, this is all in fulfillment of the Mosaic Covenant. Deuteronomy chapter 28, 1 to 14, God promised a long list of blessings that would come if they obeyed the Lord. And God is applying that long list of blessings to the individual. Even though the nation is going downhill, if you're an individual and you're walking with the Lord, there's blessing. And it's interesting that you look at any dispensation that God provides. If there's a godly individual, there's blessing. Even Noah. Noah was the only one who was righteous in his day, so God blessed him. He allowed him to be saved in the ark and so forth. So there's blessing for individual life and obedience to the Lord. However, there would be woe for the wicked individual who had ceased to see his accountability to God for blessing. For the evil of his hands that he had dealt towards others would be dealt back unto him. And that would be in fulfillment of the Mosaic Covenant at Deuteronomy 28, verses 15 to 25 and following. Now, what's exciting is that these predictions here in Isaiah chapter 3, verses 10 and 11, these predictions were actually fulfilled in the Babylonian invasion, and they are seen in the book of Jeremiah. And I want to look at that briefly. First of all, let's see what befell Ebed-Melech. Someone's saying, who's Ebed-Melech? Ebed-Melech was an Ethiopian. He's a black man. He was an Ethiopian servant or a slave. And he was a man who put his faith in God. And he rescued Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 38, beginning at verse 7. Now when Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs which was in the king's house, heard that what they had done to Jeremiah, putting him in the dungeon, the king then setting in the city of the gate of Benjamin, Ebed-Melech went forth out of the king's house and spoke to the king, saying, my lord the king, these men have done evil in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into the dungeon. And he is like to die for hunger in the place where he is, for there's no more bread in the entire city. Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, take from thence 30 men with thee, and take up Jeremiah the prophet out of the dungeon before he dies. So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury and took there an old cast clouts and old rotten rags and let them down by cords into the dungeon to Jeremiah. Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian said unto Jeremiah, now put these old cast clouts and rotten rags under your armholes, under the cords, under your armpits. And Jeremiah did so. So they drew up Jeremiah with cords and took him up out of the dungeon, and Jeremiah remained in the court of the Lord in the prison. Now we go to chapter 39, verse 15. Because Ebed-Melech salvaged the prophet of the Lord in faith in God, notice what happens in verse 15 of Jeremiah 39. Now the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, go and speak to Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian. Say, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring my words upon this city for calamity, and not for good. And they shall be accomplished in that day before you. But I will deliver you in that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt not be given into the hand of the men whom you are afraid. For I will surely deliver you, and you shall not fall by the sword, which would often happen to slaves, but your life shall be for a prey unto you, or booty, because you have put your trust in me, saith the Lord. Isn't wonderful? Here's a man in the Old Testament, a black man who put his trust in the Lord, and the Lord blessed him. That's wonderful. Now the same thing happened to Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 40, verse 1 to 6. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord after that Nebuchadnezzar, the captain of the guard, had let him go from Ramah, when he had taken him, being bound in chains among all that were carried away captive of Jerusalem and Judah, which were carried away captive to Babylon. See, Jeremiah was in the court, and he was captured along with everybody else. But notice what happens. The captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, The Lord your God has pronounced this calamity on this place. Now the Lord has brought it and done according as he has said. Because you have sinned against the Lord and have not obeyed his voice, therefore this thing has come upon you. But now, behold, I release you this day from the chains which are on your hand. If it seems good to you to come with me to Babylon, come, and I will look well unto you. But if it seems ill unto you to come with me to Babylon, forbear. Behold, all the land is in front of you. Where it seems good and convenient for you to go, there go. Now, while he was not yet turned back, he had a second thought. He said, oh, go back to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon has made governor over the cities of Judah. Dwell with him among the people, or go wherever it seems convenient for you to go. So the captain of the guard gave him food and a reward and let him go. Jeremiah had complete liberty to do whatever he wanted. Isn't that wonderful? There were a lot of people that weren't treated that way. And then finally, there's King Zedekiah. I won't read all about that, but Jeremiah chapter 38, 19 to 23 had told King Zedekiah, God wants you to go out and to surrender to the king of Babylon. And if you do, it will go well with you. If you don't, and you try to flee from him, it'll be very, very calamitous for you. Well, he decided, instead of trusting the Lord's word through Jeremiah, to flee. Well, the men of Babylon caught him. They brought him up to Ramah, and there the king slew his sons and the elders of the land in front of him, and then he put his eyes out, and then he bound him in chains and took him off to Babylon. And he did this in order to punish this man because he hadn't submitted to him. And so the word of the Lord came true. Ebed-Melech and Jeremiah obeyed the Lord, and things went well. Zedekiah didn't, and it went very, very bad. So the lesson is God called Judah not to trust in the social order itself, but to trust in and hence to heed the sovereign Lord for blessing. Regardless what happened to the social order, God would bless individuals who heeded his call. So may we not rely on the social order itself for blessing, but trust in the Lord and heed him, trusting him sovereignly to bless us as individuals that we might do his will regardless what occurs around us. Many years ago, my dad was touring in Africa when he was with the mission. And he was in one of these African nations at an airport. And suddenly they discovered that he had a camera in his suitcase. They didn't know it was there. It was kind of surprising. So very, very quickly, there were soldiers with submachine guns around my dad. And they had submachine guns aimed right at him. Dad didn't know what to do. And they started rummaging through the suitcases, and one of the soldiers there, quietly under his breath, said, we have to put on a good show. So he was letting him know what was going on. He might have even been a believer for all we know. So they put this big show on, and Dad was able to relax, and they finally got their guns away, and everything went back. But in that situation, he recognized, you know, in serving the Lord will protect you, even in a situation like that. There were probably cameras all over the place, whatnot. But it looked good for the soldiers to take this American, put him under, you know, the gun for a little bit and just to look good. But it's the Lord who protects us, even when the social order goes away. So keep that in mind.